Welcome back, beautiful listeners from around the globe. My name is Inevitable Mike, and this is another episode of the Comics and Pop Charts podcast, where we talk about comics and all of the nerd pop culture things that we all love and enjoy, most notably comics. But every now and again, we get an exciting guest who may have had something to do with comics, but is equally as enjoyable talking about as comics and the comic pop culture and the medium and movies overall. Today, I'd like to point out a live read. CrossStar Comics has got the awesome Tin Soldier coming up to Kickstarter. Go check them out at inked.pub/forward/Tin Soldier. It's an awesome book. If you love Colossus like I do, a part of the X-Men universe, you're going to love the Tin Soldier. It's very, very like-minded. It's a very cool, enthralling story that encapsulates all the things that you love about some of your favorite heroes that you grew up reading, like the Punisher and the X-Men. And a little bit of Bloodshot thrown in there, something along those lines. As always, thank you for listening to the show. If you want to help us grow the channel, like I'd like you to, I'd appreciate a share, like, subscribe, and then go sign up for our newsletter. If you go to the website, comics and the letter N, pop-charts.com, sign up for the newsletter, you'll get the 6-page preview to my comic coming out to Kickstarter later on this fall called Wild Oni. Tonight, I have a special guest. I discovered him on Kickstarter after backing a book on Kickstarter called The Last Ranger. This one is called, it's called The Red Sunrise, and it's kind of an awesome story. I reached out to the author, and J.D. Olivia himself said yes. So here he is, everybody, J.D., the author of Red Sunrise. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem. Awesome book idea. The reason I reached out, though, was you have an incredible story, and it has to do with the crux of why most authors don't succeed in the comic industry, and it's by no fault of your own, but there's a lot of business and politics that go into making comics that people don't really realize when they undertake the production of comics. Having been in the industry myself for a few years now, I've seen a lot of pitfalls, I've seen a lot of people succeed, I've seen a lot of collaborations and relationships recede, degradate, blossom, what have you. And then in the production of my own comic book, I've actually experienced a few of these trials and tribulations and obstacles that prevent people from actually going on into comics, because it is quite an out-of-pocket expense, and you definitely don't do it for the money. But I love Samurai's, man. I'm writing in the feudal Japan era, on the cusp of the Edo era ending into the westernization before, after the period of peace that they experienced when the samurais fell. And I saw your piece, and I just got done talking to Jean-Paul DeJong. He wrote a piece called Sons of Fate, which is going to come out later on this year. But I've been kind of like trying to find people that are writing in my area of expertise and in my own research, so that we could all collaborate and talk about the things that we like. So if you could, man, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started in writing, and then kind of like your career into comics, and then we'll go into why that transferred into the novel prose format.
Well, yeah, I went to college and I studied film, right? And I wanted to be in film. That was my big thing. And I made it in film. Like, I was doing indie stuff. I did a bunch of documentaries, and I made my second narrative short feature with that starred John Wesley Shipp of The Flash. He was a really cool guy to work with. And I sat up one night and I figured, this freaking sucks, man. I hate film. So, I mean, at that point I had to go, well, what do I do now? Cause I've kind of geared my life toward this spot. And this is really all I wanted to do is tell stories. And I got to my dream and I hated what I was doing. So what now? Cause I'm not capable of doing construction work, and I'm not smart enough to, be an accountant or anything like that. So, right. I love comics. So I said, I'm going to give that a whirl. And I took Andy Schmidt's, comics experience courses. I was actually one of the founding members of his online courses. So, I came up with all those guys like Rich Duick and, Paul Eller and them. Those are buddies of mine. And, I did my first comic miniseries in the early days of Kickstarter comics way back in 2011. I successfully funded, my miniseries Deluge, which was pretty cool. It took 3 years because to finish it. And like back in the day, people were funding comics back on the hope of getting it done. The business has completely transformed because of, you know, dudes like Tyler James and all that, who are basically teaching people what to do, teaching them not to make the same mistakes I made. So Deluge got finished and it, you know, we did really well. It was the early days of Comixology Submit. You know, we sold thousands of copies of that and it went great, good reviews, but I had nothing to follow it up on. Right. Like I kind of sunk all my eggs into this basket and, you know, it sold a lot, but it was cheap. So I wasn't making any money. And then like we kickstarted like $6,000, but it cost me like an additional $8,000 to finish the book. And my wife's like, we can't do this. So I kind of thought I was done. And I was trying to do a book on my own with a friend of mine. And unfortunately he passed away. Like the moment we got like a deal, right. We had a deal to do something. And then he died 2 weeks later. So it was kind of like, well, what do I do now? And I kind of thought I was done. And then I got reached out by Jamie Rich, who at the time was editing for Vertigo, and he got a hold of Deluge and was like, hey man, let's talk. So I'm like, oh, this is it. This is the moment. So I workshopped with my buddies like 4 ideas. Like I workshopped every idea I ever had. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna pitch them and it's gonna work. This is gonna be great. And we got in and he turned down one pitch and said, okay, what, give me something else. I'm like, all right, cool. So I threw him something else. He's like, I like this. And so Jamie Rich and I spent a year developing this pitch and everyone on Vertigo was on board with it. And we got to the publisher and the publisher went, I don't think so. That guy doesn't work there anymore. So, you know, no tears for me on that. But at the same time, when I was figuring that stuff out, I'm like, all right, there's a really good chance. I had friends that have gone through this. There's a really good chance they're not going to pick me up. So what do I do tomorrow? Like, if they say no, where am I? So that's when I really decided to go back into investigating Kickstarter. And that's when I started taking Tyler James's Kickstarter courses. And I kind of got involved with the comics launch scene. And I took my other idea that they rejected, and that became Red Sunrise. And then we kickstarted the first issue of the book back in 2017. And we put it out, the first issue, fulfilled that Kickstarter. And then, you know, kind of the artist and I's relationship really kind of fell apart. You know, I wasn't thrilled with the work we were getting and he wasn't making deadlines and it just wasn't going to happen. But at the same time, I met Russell Nolte, who, you know, is kind of the Kickstarter machine, right? For comics and prose. And he's become a friend and a mentor. And, you know, I had these other manuscripts sitting in my computer. I'm like, well, maybe I should try to sell these while I was waiting for all this stuff to get done. So I kind of transferred a lot of work to just doing prose. And I found that, quite frankly, I'm better at it, you know, and it's where I get frustrated working in the comics world, trying to get, you know, people on the same page when it comes to writing prose. It's just me, man. I write a book and I got an editor that I work with and, you know, she's awesome. And she helps me with my stuff and like really, really pushes me to get better. And I got a cover artist that I do work with and she's awesome too. And it's been great. I put out 12 books in the last 3 years. So I'm super, super pumped about that. But then I decided it was time to finish Red Sunrise. So I took the story that I never finished as a comic and we did a novella. So, and that's out right now. We have, and when this launches, it'll probably be the final 24 hours, the final 48 hours, excuse me, of the Kickstarter. And it's been solid, man, for novellas and for Kickstarters being fairly new to the fiction prose space. It's doing fine. It's not doing as well as my other ones did, but again, my last series was the 3-volume 1,000-page opus. And this is, you know, 150-page book about samurais and vampires. So I'm really happy. We're poised to get up to break 100 backers for me. That's a big milestone. I've never done that before, but yeah, that's a long story short, kind of my journey to, you know, I don't want to be a filmmaker anymore to, you know, I've hit the Amazon bestseller charts a few times.
And what was it about films that kind of just put you on that downward spiral? Was it the people that you work with? Was it the way that they marketed? Was it the projects themselves or the gatekeepers?
That's a little bit of everything, to be honest. And I can't complain gatekeepers. Cause I had some opportunities to talk to people and I had opportunities to like move out to LA and to work in the business. And at the end of the day, I just didn't like it enough. Like, I don't really like being on set is what it comes down to. I really don't like being there. Like I'm a homebody at heart, you know, I got my wife and my kid at home and I'm a high school wrestling coach. So that's like, that's something that like is like most people have, like they go golfing or something like that, or they have like a hobby. Though this, that's my thing. Like I work with high school kids, and you know, the idea of spending the rest of my life spending 15 hours a day on a set, after a while, it didn't appeal to me. Like I made a couple of them and I just didn't enjoy it. Like I didn't enjoy the logistics. I didn't enjoy fundraising, because like it takes significant capital to make even at the time too, when I was doing it 12, 15 years ago, like it costs a lot of money to get an independent film made. It's better now than it used to be, but you still got to come up with a lot of money. And I don't really like that aspect of things. So it just wasn't a place for me. And like, at the end of the day, when I walked away from it, I've never felt bad about it, because I've always had this outlet, be it comics, be it you know, writing prose. Like I've always had that outlet to go. And like my regular job, like I was a videographer for 15 years, and I owned my own video production company. I'm now a video and graphics teacher at a high school. So, I mean, like I get my outlet there, like the stuff I went to school for, I'm still using it in my day-to-day life. I just don't want to be on set is what it really comes down to.
Yeah. The magic was kind of revealed, and you were like, oh, I hate this formula.
Yeah, pretty much. Like it came down to that. I'm like, oh God, we really have to wait for this. God, we really do. I mean, like it's a lot of, it's my impatience. Like I just don't really enjoy the process of it. It just wasn't for me. Like I have people, like my brother has been doing this stuff, he's a sound engineer. He's been doing it for 15 years now. He's great at it. My cousin's in the DGA as a second assistant director. He's awesome at it. They love it. It just, at the end of the day, I was like, ugh, the idea of just being on set all the time just makes me physically ill. I like sitting at the computer though. I like writing. I like creating. I enjoy video editing. It's the process in the middle that I wasn't in love with.
Right. That's a hard thing to do, man, to make that pivot, really something that you love, and then having to admit that there's something better, and then transforming and adapting to different.
I think that's a lot of people. There's a lot of people talk about, well, I have this dream, and it's like, well, what do you really want to do? Like, why do you want to do something? Do you really want to create, or do you want to try to be famous or something like that? Do you want to try to be renowned? Like for me, ultimately, all I want to do is tell stories. Right. And this is the medium that I found that I'm, quite frankly, this works the best for me. You know, it's a good process for me, and I'm happy. And like, you know, the family life is going good, and you know, I got my house, I got my, you know, my family, I got my dog. So, I mean, like for me, it's perfect. And then I can sit in my room and write about, you know, vampires and stuff.
Now, speaking to your transition from film and then going into the medium, writing stories, and you tried your hand in comics, was the communication between the artist and yourself, I mean, was that degraded based on, I mean, lack of communication, or the content wasn't to his liking? Explain how that kind of degraded, because I've had to pivot myself in my own project where, you know, a lot of the times most of your cheaper artists or your lower page rates are going to come outside the country, which is difficult because there's a language barrier you have to cross. Fortunately for me, my out of country resource wasn't as adept to me having to reduce like the number of like adjectives or action verbs or verbs or tense problems in the way that I communicated with him. My issue was the pace. I mean, 1 to 2 pages every couple of months just wasn't gonna work for me. So I ended up having to hire an entertainment company with an art team to finish my book. I mean, are those some of the obstacles that you guys experienced in the relationship?
Similar, like on Deluge, it took 3 years to finish the book because the guy I was working with was really good. Rich Clark's a really good artist. Like when he started Deluge, when he finished it, he also worked with, you know, Corey Taylor and on House of Golden Bones. He also worked with Grant Morrison and Derek Robertson on Happy. Like he was just in demand, and I was down the list of importance. Excuse me. I was down the list of importance. So we were friends, but I couldn't tell him, no, don't go get paid more. Right. Like I was being a friend, and you know, I had to be patient, which I didn't mind. You know, it worked out great for him, and I got a good product out of it that I was very happy with. But when Red Sunrise we were working that, the goal for me was, okay, this has to be a more efficient process. This has to work better. And Tyler said to me, he's like, you know, Tyler James, he's like, you know, you probably want to have this finished before you kickstart it. And I didn't listen again. And like, I'm like, no, I can do this. This digital only book, this will be fine. You know, he had 10 pages done, and I'm like, okay, I feel comfortable launching. And he got it done. The first issue went okay. The second issue was not as good. Like the communication was decent, but not great. And he was from the US. So he was another Chicago guy, but it just, I wasn't thrilled with the product. Like, I think he was trying his best to meet the deadlines that I was trying, and I was pulling him back. I'm like, hey, you need more time? I'll give you more time. But I wasn't really thrilled with the work I was getting. And same, I was getting 1 to 2 pages a month. And it just wasn't like, if it's fast and cheap, it's not going to be good. But if it's neither fast nor cheap nor good, then what am I in business with? You know? Right. So eventually it's like, okay, this isn't working for me. You know, and I just had to say, and then go to another friend to finish it. So the pages are done. The problem is the guy who was going to finish it for me had such a drastically different style that it just didn't work. Like I was looking at this together and I'm like, it's not going to make sense if I package this together and I say, this is the same story. Like, and the guy, you know, Eric Rose did a great job finishing for me and I appreciate it, but it didn't work. And so like, well, I could spend money on coloring and lettering, or I could just say, you know what, it's a wash and just let it be a wash. And it's my money and I'm okay with letting it say it's a wash. So what I'm doing now is I'm taking all that unfinished art and it's a reward tier in the book, in the Kickstarter campaign, which is cool. Cause now I get to use stuff that's been sitting on my computer for 4 or 5 years to, you know, help booster up my prose Kickstarter, which is something that most prose Kickstarters can't offer. Most don't have art attached to it, even unfinished art. So it's kind of cool. It's a simple PDF. Didn't cost me anything in you know, the short term to make. So, you know, it is what it is.
Do you ever have any regrets of washing the project as a comic altogether?
No, cause it wasn't right. It wasn't what I wanted it to be. I don't feel bad about doing it because I learned so much about Kickstarter. Like I was able to implement the lessons that Tyler James taught me and I was able to make it work. And so for that, I'm incredibly grateful. The story's finished. So I'm good with it. Like I feel like I'm putting it to bed and this prose version is the best version of it. Like it's better than the scripts that I had written. I'm really, really happy with that. As for a comic goes, like I've kind of resigned myself to the fact that, okay, this really wasn't meant to be a comic and I'm okay with it. Right. Like I don't get married to things in one way or another. Like I'm super adaptable. Like, okay, this doesn't work. Let's try this. And as long as I have something out that I'm proud of, you know, that I'm okay with it. My first novel was a book called Hollow, and it was a horror story that I made with my friend that passed away, right? That was supposed to be a comic, and that never became a comic because it didn't feel right to have somebody, to bring somebody else in to finish something I developed with a friend of mine that you know, died at 30. So that book became like, okay, this is a memorial tribute to my friend who's not with us, right? Like, so that was the difference. I mean, just for me, it always felt like every time I try to get into comics, really, I stumble. Like that's saying I'm never gonna go back. I did me and Eric Rose, the guy who finished Red Summers, we just did the Cthulhu's Hard to Spell Battle Royal anthology book with Russell Nolte's group. Like we did that and I was super proud of it. I brought Ethan Jericho, one of my characters from my long-running Books of Jericho series. I got to translate him into a 6-page comic story, which for me is like a dream come true, because that's like I was like, I guess I'm done with comics. And then, you know, Russell's like, hey, why don't you try this? And I'm like, sure, let's do that. And it was a fun time to just jump in and try something again. You know, so I'll probably do something with comics again. But I mean, as far as this goes, like, I feel completed with it. Like, again, bringing it back to Kickstarter where it was started, you know, it feels like this is like a good end point to it. Cause again, this was never meant to be more than just a simple story, right? So it's not even a real novel. It's a 150 page novella. Like there's not much more there than the story that I have. Right. So right. I feel good about it.
It's awesome, man. It's always good to feel good about what you do. A lot of authors struggle with that syndrome that makes you feel like
the imposter syndrome. I deal with it all the time. Like it's crippling in some cases, but you know, I don't know, because the book is, I like the book. You're never happy with what you do completely. Like a project isn't ever finished. It's always just kind of, well, it's kind of done. Like this is as good as I am capable of making it. Like what I feel good, like it's weird. Cause I never, like, I always look back on my books like, it could be better. You know, you're your own harshest critic, but as far as like, from the journey that it's taken these past 5 years to being like done makes me proud. Like to the point where like I'd written it off as, well, that's just this idea that I had and it didn't work. And now to be like, all right, you know what? Maybe it isn't what I dreamed it would be, but I like what it is. And now it can just kind of exist and be this thing and I can move on. You know, I feel good about that. I feel closure with it, I guess is the best way to put it.
I feel really good about having you on the show, man. Russell's actually been on the show.
He's a great guy.
He came onto the show to promote Hard to Spell. I missed the window on that because I'd just gotten into the groups of comic creators that, you know, pretty much all work close-knit together and feed off of each other and collaborate with other works and stuff, keep everybody paid and happy. And he's an incredible storyteller. He's also
for sure.
A businessman. I followed his entire San Diego Comic-Con post, and he was putting all these analytics and all these great just comparisons as far as like diagnostics for what he made in previous years to what he made this year.
There's no one like him, and he's a great writer and a great storyteller, but I almost think he's underrated in his abilities as an editor, right? Because he's really good at putting together these anthologies, and that's a skill, right? Like, that is not something that some rando can do. Like, he is really, really good. And like, it was cool to get notes from him on the story. Cause again, I've never really worked with a comics editor before. I've always kind of done my own thing. And he's like, hey, I need this, 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 and this changed. And I was just like, you know, this is cool. This is something I've never had before. So yeah, I'm playing in somebody else's sandbox right now. So I'm going to make this work. And like, it was awesome to have, you know, that kind of a repertoire and relationship with each other to work to making a project better. And it was a super, super awesome experience working with him. And like, he's I took his Kickstarter for authors course because he's the man, he's figured it out. So, I mean, if one is looking to figure out a way to make a living being an independent creator, he is one of the best minds to learn from. Him and Tyler James are the two guys that I think everybody who wants to have a career in this business should really study under their tree. And they're both really sharp.
I'm actually kind of tickled that you took comics experience so far.
Oh yeah.
When I finished my master's in creative writing for entertainment, that was the first continuing education field that I went into. I took the comics experience beginning intro into comics writing class with Andy and Paula Lore, and that's where I wrote my first 5-page and understood. Yep. And was taught the importance of confined story and storytelling on turn points and beats, and how if you can write a 5-page, you can write a one-off, and if you can write a one-off, then you can plan out a series. I still use a lot of the processes from that class in my own writing today.
Ditto. Everything I learned about storytelling, I really learned from Andy. Like, as a prose writer, my process is pretty identical. Like, I write, like in prose world, we talk about, are you a plotter or are you a pantser? Like, do you write tight outlines or are you a guy who just kind of writes the story as you go along? And I'm a super tight outline guy because of my background in comics, because, you know, I had you in comics experience specifically teach you to be economical with your words, with your phrasings. Right. You want to make sure if you're writing a 1-page of comic strip, that fits on 1 page of, you know, computer paper essentially. Like, and those are lessons that I've applied to prose writing that have made, I think, really makes my work super focused. Like, my chapters tend to be around 1,000 words, so they're not too many pages. And one of the best critiques that I get is like, man, your work really moves. Like, and it does. And it's that, those lessons from comics. Like, I pace my books so much like a comic is paced. Like, that, like, you want that page root, like that page turn, you want to inspire that little page turn moment. Like, every one of my chapters, I try to end with like a reason to turn the page, be it, you know, a hanging action, be it a question, something like something that motivates the reader to keep going. And again, those are the lessons that I applied from comics. And it's like, it's been, you know, I can't express how influential it's been on my creative career.
I've often said this, that novel writers can actually learn from comic writers.
For sure.
Even though, you know, much like you, I wanted to go into film, but I wanted to write film. I didn't want to be on set unless I, you know, one day discovered that I'd want to be a showrunner, in which case then I'd be present. But I wanted to, I just didn't see the feasibility of moving so far away.
Same.
From where I'm at, especially during the time when I finished college. I mean, we're talking about right in the dead center of the epidemic.
Oh, so okay.
Travel was restricted. Politics were just unsavory, and I just decided to go into comics because comics called me, and it was just one of those mediums where I could do it from home, kind of like how you find satisfaction and just, you know, being in your room at your desk just writing, you know, stories that you don't have to worry about getting deadlines into artists and, having to get all these different fragments to put your story together. It's just you and your story. And so I decided to build it out that way. And I believe that a lot of the storytelling mechanics that you're speaking to that have transferred over into prose writing has actually affected my overall storytelling that I've also brought in, you know, from the perspective of film writing, which is similar mm-hmm. to the process of comics, except comics tackles it from a storytelling perspective using, you know, more structured focus and more visible outlines, like you said, economy, tightening up your wordplay and tightening up, you know, your action, making it always constantly move forward. Is there anything else to speak on, you know, for those who might be listening? From your experience and just, I guess, a bunch of multifaceted multimedia writing disciplines on like how you could do that.
Every writing has its own language, right? Everything has its own format. Everything has its own way of doing things. But once you learn the simple elements of story and really how to tell a story, and I'm a firm believer in a good 3-act structure because it works, right? I think anything can be applied to a 3-act structure because it's a great way to tell a story. And if you're learning how to write specifically, it's a great way to help shape your story. So I think that once you learn those elements of story, once you learn how to serve character, once you understand that, you know, character drives story, not the other way around, you can apply those elements to any form of writing, be it film, television, comics, animation, prose, right? It's all, if you could do one, you could probably do the other. There might be one elements you're stronger at than others, but I mean, like once you can have a basic understanding of what works and why something works, like you can't throw out lessons. You can't like reject lessons until you understand why those lessons work. And you know, if you're going to do something different, you have to understand why you're breaking a rule. And that has to have a fundamental impact on the story you're telling, but you need to know the rules before you break the rules, because rules are important. Without them, a story is a mess, right? So once you learn the fundamentals, then you can, you know, play. And once you know how to play, then you can experiment a little bit, you know. And I think that education is super important. Like, you know, you wouldn't take your car to a mechanic who's never learned how to fix a car, just some dude, right? So I think that, you know, if you want to have a job in the creative field, you need to have had some type of educational background. Like you need to have mentored under somebody. And for me, you know, from the storytelling perspective, learning from me is huge. And, you know, business-wise, learning from Tyler and Russell's been helpful. And I'm, you know, still growing, still trying to get better, still, you know, both from the work standpoint and the marketing standpoint. You know, we all have to grow. We all can't be happy with where we're at in our careers, because I want to be better. Right. Like I want to, like when I run a Kickstarter, I want to knock on that 5-figure door. I want to eventually hit that 6-figure door. Like it's hard, but that's what motivates me. That's what keeps me going. And like, I want to be a better writer. I want to be, you know, someone that, you know, I want to have someone, man, these books are awesome. And every single one of them is great. And it's just, it's work. It's just working on your craft and being able to put something away when you're done with it and understanding that, okay, this was where I was at this time. Now I have to get here. And every book has to be a time capsule of where you were creatively in that moment. Right. I think that's why I can let go of a story. Cause like for me, like Red Sunrise, the original one, is where I was as a writer in 2017. This one is where I am in 2022. You know, this is what we are. And I have to be comfortable with improving. Right. Like you're not going to hit a home run. Like there's one JD Salinger and he didn't do much after that. Right. So you have to be constantly moving forward, or trying to move forward anyway, like trying to get better. So that's kind of what I would say.
And for those who want to know more about the Comics Experience writing courses and other courses offered by Comics Experience, you can go to comicsexperience.com. If you're a writer and you don't have the money to take those writing courses, because they are rather expensive, even though I will say that they are worth it, you can go to amazon.com. And Andy published a book called Comics Experience Guide to Writing Comics, Scripting Your Story Ideas from Start to Finish, that have a lot of the same structural foundations and lessons that he used in the class with Paul Allure. I always try to pay it forward to Comics Experience for always giving me that first publishing Comics Experience storytelling atmosphere of the comics industry that I use now in my own series.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. And you know, you said the old you, 2017, and then compared to the 2022 you as a writer, in between this time, you had finished other stories. You had different perspectives on on the story, the types of stories you were writing, or maybe the types of characters that you were creating versus, you know, the plots and conflicts and perspective writing functionalities that you were using versus the ones that you had come to find yourself in 2022. How much of the original comic transpired, transposed over into what is, you know, the prose novel version of Ren Sunrise? And you go ahead and tell us a little bit about what Red Sunrise is.
Oh, we should probably talk about what the book is. That's a good point. I'd say Act 1 and Act 2 are structurally pretty much the same. Like, I'm really happy with those parts of the stories. Always have been. The end is identical. The end, I thought of the story in college when I was a film major, and I wrestled in college, so I had 5 years to get a 4-year degree, so I wound up double majoring. I had a history degree too, and I was in my Japanese history course, and I remember thinking, like, you know, this would be, you know, we were talking about the Tokugawa shogunate, and I'm like, this would be really cool if the shogun was a vampire. Like, it just popped into my head, and it always stuck with me. So I've had this ending in my head since 2002 or 2003, something like that. So the ending's always been the same, but Act 3 was largely different. Like, it took place, and it was just very, very different by the time I got to it in the prose version of the story. And that's because, like, I went back, and when I read my scripts, you know, I think it was last fall I started working on this thing. When I read my original scripts, I went, boy, that's kind of weak, that Act 3. It's not as good as I thought it was. So it gave the coming back to a project is kind of nice because you can see how much you've grown as a writer. And for me, it's been a case of I just do it a lot. Like, I'm super disciplined with my writing. Like, I try to write 3,000 words a day. If I'm working on a book, if I'm editing a book, it's something different. But if I'm creating a book, like, I'm 3,000 words a day, and I'm real near religious about it. So I've done a lot of writing, and I've, you know, been, when you do writing, you get edited a lot. And, you know, being on Amazon is great because people leave reviews and feedback, and you can get feedback from people so you can see where you've made mistakes. So again, we're all getting better. So in hindsight, I was able to go, okay, you know, this has Act 3 issues. Let's revamp Act 3. So that's pretty much the big change, is kind of not where we leave, because where we leave is the same, but how we get to where we leave changed. Not greatly, but enough. So that's say the big thing is the story of Red Sunrise is essentially Yojimbo meets Dracula. You know, it's what if the shogun of Japan in feudal Japan was in fact a vampire? And what if his court was just a bunch of vampires, like a demon horde? And then a young girl hires a wandering samurai, like a masterless samurai who's pretty much lost his honor, and he's a bit of a nihilist, and, you know, he's afraid of death, doesn't embrace the idea of death, you know, actually runs away from it. He gets hired to take vengeance for this girl, and that's kind of like where we jump off. And it's really basically just vampires versus samurais. And what's fun about this is taking an Eastern European mythos concept like the vampire and transposing it into, you know, a Far East history gives you a lot of opportunities to subvert the genre, because so many vampire stories specifically are predicated on the audience's knowledge of vampires, right? Like, we know what they are. When you put vampires in a place where nobody knows who they are, they can't rely on tropes to figure out how to beat them. They have to figure stuff out on their own. And one thing I really like is they're vampires, but I never call them vampires, because that word wouldn't have existed. Like, they're demons, but it's very clear they're vampires. And as the writer, I make it pretty obvious that it's vampires, but they don't know how to fight a vampire, so they have to figure out ways to beat them. And then you're kind of freed in a ways, right? Because then you don't have to, like, follow the tropes. You don't have to do what everybody else has done. You have some freedom to let your characters discover things on their own. And being samurais, you know, we chop a lot of body parts off, which is always a lot of fun.
That's so true. So it's got some mystery entailed into it. It's like in modern day, if I wanted, you know, to persecute somebody who I thought killed my mom, I would hire a private detective who probably didn't make it or cut it out in law enforcement and had to do all these weird, crazy things to get around the law to find out what happened and end up discovering that it wasn't people that killed, you know, that killed that person. It was vampires.
Yeah, it's the same idea, but because the setting is different, you get to, like I said before, transpose these genre tropes upon something different. And it's really the same, like the wandering samurai story, like with Kurosawa, huge influence on this story in particular, right? It's not very different than like a cowboy or a private eye or whatever, or like the big drawn, the big yeah, I'll just call it a trope. Big trope right now in thriller fiction is the assassin, right? Your Jack Reachers or whatnot. It's no different here. You just call him a samurai, and everybody knows what a samurai is. So you can play in that world, but put your own little spin on it, which is fun.
That's awesome, man. And the period of Tokugawa, that was before Nobunaga took over.
I believe so. I guess it's just like it's like it's like fantasy, right? Like it's almost like Game of Thrones, where you know it's medieval, but not really. So it's the same thing here. Like it's feudal Japan, but like you know we get to play because it's monsters, right? So we get to take a scenario that you are familiar with, and then by not slapping a date on like a firm year, like this takes place in 1622. No, it just takes place, right? And so it's like a Western. Like is it 1864? Is it 1812? Like we don't know. It just is. Right. So that's right. Kind of what we do here a little bit, like, and embracing the fantasy elements again gives you that freedom.
Oh man, if you watch Japanese samurai documentary on Netflix, it's like a 6-part series, Samurai and the Shogunate, the entire political process is in fact Game of Thrones.
Absolutely. I mean, it's fascinating.
The entire political system was based on the strength and honor of men, and if you were weak and your fellow shogunates and supporting commanders and lieutenants thought you were weak, they were going to assassinate you. And most of the time, especially when you know after Nobunaga died, there was lots of like power vacuums and plays for being prime minister or being prime minister or shogun was basically the same title. It's the history of it is fascinating. I would have loved to see like a Game of Thrones, you know, like an actual Game of Thrones scenario put on like a TV show, you know, with that entire history encompassing. But the documentary pretty much summed it up into 6 episodes, like from, you know, the beginning of Nobunaga's reign all the way up until the death of Toyotomi Hideyoshi. And then when Ichigo takes over and then, you know, sets up pretty much the end of the Edo era, which brought in that, you know, 230 plus years of peace before, you know, Westerners showed up after they moved the capital of Kyoto and renamed it Tokyo and then Westernized. And then that was the end of the samurai. And if you've seen The Last Samurai, you get a good picture of what Tom Cruise had to go through in that movie.
That's really cool. I've never seen this documentary and I just wrote that down. So that is on my list of stuff to watch immediately. Oh.
It's so funny. I was actually finishing up the last couple of pages on the script for Wild Oni, and I was researching. I was doing some more research because I started on the island of Tsushima, and I did that because there's this technique in writing, and you probably have heard this or have read it yourself, where things seem so isolated. Almost like your reader is living in a keyhole until you open the door and realize the world is much bigger. J.K. Rowling made an excellent example in her entire Harry Potter series, where she always climaxed at the end, where could it get any worse was the question posed. And of course, for Harry, it always got worse. And it just seems like she kept adding to, you know, the fire up until the end of the series, where it was just like it was the end, and then there was like nothing else could get worse than this, because you know Voldemort died, and in essence he kind of died, but then was like reborn to the Phoenix story. It was a very beautiful concept, but the island of Tsushima is close in the Korean Strait, you know, right up the coast from like Russia, but more importantly, in cohesion with Japanese history, with Korea, and you know all of their attempts to invade China. Which is Toyotomi Hideyoshi's, you know, amazing, brilliant plan. I started on the island of Tsushima because it was a base point for, you know, both attempts of invasions on Korea. And it's actually inspired by one of my favorite video games, Ghost of Tsushima, which Sucker Punch did an amazing job at creating. And it had all these really beautiful nuances into samurai and Japanese culture from like the 12 and 1300s. And so I started there, and eventually the story was going to go into Japan. So I was doing research on Japan, and I had found some really good references on Toyotomi Hideyoshi. And I don't know if it's fate or if it's the world saying, hey, Mike, this is a great idea. You're on the right track. Because so the documentary takes place when Nobunaga becomes shogun after the death of a very notable shogun and left the power vacuum. And it was Nobunaga's father. And then from there, it just pretty much describes from Nobunaga's era in like 1560 something all the way up to like 1603, 1607, almost 40 years of history in six episodes. And I've watched it three times and now I have to go back and make like little sketch notes, but it is a fascinating history. When you get a chance to watch it, it might even give you like sequel ideas. That's a possibility for Red Sunrise, but it's a fascinating subject that I've been trying to discuss with other people. My wife really doesn't talk about history, and I'm it's more of a one-sided conversation topic, but it's exciting. But I've never really gotten the experience of samurai versus vampires. I think there are like some independent movies, like live action Japanese movies, that you don't really get the pleasure of watching here in the States unless, you know, you see it on Netflix and it's been like it's been transcribed into letters, so you get to read the movie while being visually stimulated, or I've seen that done in anime, but never from an American perspective. Did you have to do any research going inside this, or did you just pull from your, you know, historical degree background?
I just pulled a little bit. Like I said, I really wasn't interested in mirroring actual history, because right. Like, and then it becomes like you're checking boxes. Like, I have this pitch idea that I want to do for like a detective story in ancient Rome. That's a lot more like checking boxes. So I didn't want that. I really wanted the Game of Thrones is a great example, right? I really wanted that freedom to play in a familiar world that didn't have like, well, this has to happen and this has to happen. So I did enough research. Like, yeah, I did do some watching of documentaries. I did go back and do some reading. I watched a lot of Kurosawa again because I wanted that vibe. The vibe was what was really important to me. Like I said, like Kurosawa was amazing at like translating other works, right? And making them more understandable for his audience. Like, Throne of Blood is a favorite because it's Macbeth, right? I love Macbeth, and he figured out a way to make that story super relatable for his audience. So that's really what I was going for. Like, I was really going for like a vibe more so than the details, right? And I did, when I needed details on stuff, like I went and I read, like, and that stuff kind of really, I don't want to give away too much, because a lot of it plays into the actual story, but right. As far as like actual like historical, there's no historical figures, there's nothing like, well, this is this and this is that, like this is really just, you know, a familiar world with a different spin, basically.
Interesting facts. Akira Kurosawa, for those of you who don't know, and I'm sure you're talking about the director, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Awesome. Eight top films are Seven Samurai, High and Low, Ikiru, Red Beard, Rashomon, Ran, Yojimbo, which I think you referenced earlier.
Yes, sir.
And Dersu Uzala. That's from 1954 all the way to 1975. But I've never watched any of those films, and now I want to watch them all.
Oh, Yojimbo. You ever see Fistful of Dollars? The Clint Eastwood movie? The very first Man with No Name movie?
No. No,
okay, that is Sergio Leone's adaptation of Yojimbo. It's about a samurai who gets involved in like two warring clans, and he kind of plays them against each other, and then they turn on him, and then he turns on them again. It's awesome. And then the Seven Samurai is a classic. Hidden Fortress was the movie that George Lucas basically lifted the structure for Star Wars, right? Like, he's wow. Like Ron is King Lear. Like, that's really what Kurosawa does a lot of. Like, it's just not all of it, because like Rashomon is basically this awesome story where an incident happens and you get three different variations on how it happens. So it really plays with unreliable narrators and perspectives. Like, he's brilliant, man.
That's awesome, man. I'm gonna have to check out some of these films. Yeah, Yojimbo actually means bodyguard in English.
Correct.
That's awesome. See, I get trapped in these rabbit pitfalls, where like I go into like research and I get lost in like the intimate parts of the historical data, and I start looking up all these character names and stuff, which is the whole reason why I reached out, because I knew it would just kick off this entire series of research searches and domino. That's awesome. Are there any sequels planned, or was it kind of like an homage to finishing the book from, you know, the failed comic from back in the day and kind of closing a chapter on that story?
So when Andy Schmidt was talking to us about, you know, when you're pitching, you're not going to get opportunities to do anything grand. So have a short story, have a mini series, have something with a clear finish. So in my mind, this has always been a 3-issue miniseries. Gotcha. So I never thought about it, but if I hit 100 backers, I said that I would write another story. So I'm going to do a short story that I do have an idea in mind involving something, but as far as like a full out sequel goes, we'll leave it this way. I really can't write a sequel, but I could do another story. And I just, all my stuff tends to take place. It doesn't tend. It actually does. Like I have like, I don't want to say a universe because that sounds really grandiose and like pretentious. Like, but all my stuff kind of, you know, shares a similar continuity. It just, you know, not everybody talks to everybody. So, I mean, like, cause it makes it easier for me. It makes it more fun for me. So like all my books have the same, you know, space that it plays in, but the characters don't necessarily interact, but occasionally they do. So this is like the past, in the deep past, and like the world that I typically write in. So I mean, like there's elements of it that have appeared in other books of mine that just were to entertain me, basically. And nobody, I don't think anybody would ever really notice. I had no intention of finishing this till recently. So I have another short story in mind for it, but as far as like an actual follow-up, nothing has struck me. So I mean I could, if I ever get inspired to do something else, I might, but for right now, this is just kind of, it kind of is what it is, you know. It's like a down and dirty, short, like a short novel, not short novel. You know, it's kind of the point of it, right? I wanted to get away because the Books of Jericho, my big series, that's on six books with two, you know, that fed out of two other books, and then I got my Wolfstone Saga, that's four books. So I really wanted to kind of get away from the long running series and just do something different, do something gritty, you know. And that's kind of the point.
Break.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. And kudos to you, because this, like you said earlier, this was the pitch that failed at Vertigo originally, correct?
This was not. This was the pitch that, well, yeah, okay. I guess it did. Yeah, this was the pitch that Jamie, you know, when he was writing, he's a great editor, by the way. He did not have to take as much time as he did to work with a guy that they didn't do anything with. But I mean, he really helped me refashion my pitch for another book. That's the book that I'm working on now that, we'll see the light of day in 2023. That's something very different. But yeah, this was one he kind of said, nah, I'm not feeling that one, which is cool. Cause I said, okay, cool. You don't like that? I'll go work on this over here. This will be my indie book, you know? So that's cool. But this is, like I said, this was something that I've been working on since 2016. I thought it was long dead, but like a vampire, it rises again. And like I said, it's fine. It's fun to finally have this. And, you know, I love the, my editor was great. I love our cover artist. The artwork is fantastic. And it's great to just, you know, finally have this thing done where I can say, yep, Red Sunrise. You can get that on, you know, eventually it'll be on Amazon for like $2. So, I mean, it's going to be great to have this thing done, but for right now it's on Kickstarter and it's the only place you can get it. And it's a story I'm proud of, you know?
And describe that feeling though, crossing the finish line. You know, because, I mean, this is a novel, and not to say that it's any less a paired content that you have to worry about fulfilling, like comics are. But, I mean, it's already finished. All you have to do is wait for the campaign, and then...
Yeah, what book's done.
Yes. And then it's the feeling of that crossing the finish line, the validation you get from finishing something, and all the people that you brought into this story... describe that feeling that nobody else really can describe, but somebody who's crossed it before.
I'm an athlete. So I grew up playing sports. I'm very active coaching. Be very goal oriented when you have that life, right? You're always looking to hit your next milestone. Gotcha. And with wrestling specifically, like it's very one-on-one, right? You're looking to beat the guy in front of you. And a vast majority of my life has revolved around this silly sport, because there's nothing like that victory, that moment where your hand gets raised to the crowd and then it's over. And then you have to worry about your next match. Writing is very much like that to me. Like, I'm fighting with my brain. I'm fighting with the computer. I'm fighting with this story to exercise this demon. And then you slay it, and it feels great in the moment when you finish that first draft. Because that's like you really feel accomplished. And then you go back to write that. Because I do a garbage draft. Like, I just write. Like, the first draft is just right. You know, you just get it done. And then I go back and I work on it. And then it's like taking up the fight all over again. So then it gets to the editor, and then it's still your slang, you're battling it. And when it's finally time to release it, I hate this book, you know, because I put so much into it. And then it's like, it's done, it's over, I love it, but man, am I ready to do something else? And I am. Like, for me, it's like, okay, one mountain is climbed, that mountain is bigger, let's go get it. So I'm constantly looking for that next fight. Right. I'm constantly looking to slay the next dragon. So, I mean, like, it's, you won a battle, but the war, there's just so much more to do. And that's what keeps me going. Right. Is like, I've never felt like accomplished with anything. Like, it's always, okay, that was done. I'm proud of it. Could be better. What about this one? So, which works in spite of the marketing mind, which means you have to maximize this thing that you've been working on. When, like, you know, left brain wants to tackle the next demon. Right brain is like, hey man, we got to make money off this thing. Let's put some focus onto this. So, you know, people talk about that. I have two wolves inside my body. One wolf wants to just eat everything. The other wolf wants to, you know, hey, you know, you have a mortgage, you know, we gotta pay these here bills. So it's constantly a fight, and you know, your victories are never that great and your losses are never as bad as you think they are. So it's always a constant struggle to try to be better.
So life for you, and including writing, is much like a wrestling match in a lot of ways.
This is the way I choose life because it's how I'm comfortable. It's strange as it is to sound, like, I kind of thrive off competition, thrive off conflict. And a lot of it's just self-competition, right? Like, I'm constantly challenging myself, and that's what it really, really matters. Like, that's what it really matters. Like, if I didn't have to sell these things, I would just write them and keep going on. But right. At the same time, what matters to me more is when what matters to me the most is when someone comes out of their day to reach out to me to tell me about the story, right? Or what it meant to them, or how it made them feel, right? Or like when someone else like just shares your stuff online, it's like, wow, they didn't have to do that, right? Or like when I get an email from someone on my email list and they just want to talk about the book and the characters they like, or like, you know, like, I got this one guy who emails me all the time about John Grey Wolf, and he's like, man, I love that guy. He's me. And he just talks about it. And I'm like, then you feel it. Cause then, like, so it's easy for me to get caught up in the fight, right? Like, I love the fight, but like the artist in me doesn't really get fed a lot. But when I hear these things, it makes it feel like, man, maybe this is worth it. Maybe it doesn't have to be a fight all the time. So it's like, it's weird. Like I said, I have a hard time reconciling what I do. Right. So it's rewarding. Like I almost like marketing because I like the feedback, you know, like it doesn't keep me going, but it lets me know that there's a reason to keep going.
Philosophically speaking, writing is much like how you live your life, including wrestling. If you look at it, because I have a great of wrestling knowledge, wanting to be one when I grew up, not in, you know, athletic wrestling, Greco-Roman wrestling, but pro wrestling, the entertainment kind.
Oh, I love that, man. Love pro wrestling.
I chose family over that dream, and the dream I chose now. But I always kept a lot of the same sentiments, the goal orientation, the next opponent. But I find something very, very confusing. And still to this day, I wrestle with the understanding of why one would work so hard for just that, like you said, that single moment of your hand being raised, knowing that when the lights are off, when the arena is empty, and you know, when the guys left behind are breaking down the ring, that tomorrow is only another match, and you're only as good as your next opponent. In order to stay better, does it ever get exhausting? Because I could hear myself listening to this as a fan, and I would have to wonder,
does that lifestyle in which you chose to live, because you enjoy, you know, the feedback and the fans, and you enjoy your own writing, and you're in love with that process, and you know, feeding all the wolves, and it keeps you hungry and it keeps you satiated and you're satisfied with, does it ever get exhausting?
It's so crazy you ask this, because I've been through this struggle a lot in my life of like asking that question of, is this worth it, back in my athletic career and in the creative career, because it takes a long, like everyone's looking for that home run. Like everyone wants to hit a home run their first time out and it never happens. Right. And it finally, I'm getting older, you know, I'm 40 and I've worn a lot of different hats. Right. And it's now as a dad and as a coach and as doing this stuff, I finally figured out what people mean when they say it's the journey, because it really is. Like the process of writing a book is the best. The process of creating, the process of doing that first draft and discovering your, because you have an outline. I told you I write from a tight outline, but it always changes, right? Like you make a plan and like it doesn't always go to plan. Like it's like I equate it to driving. Like I'm going to X place. Like I know how to get there. I have a map. But because I know where I'm going, I can detour a little bit. Like I can get off the road. You know, I hear this place has a good burger. I'll go check it out. Like it's that journey that makes it fun. That's why I like driving. Like I enjoy traveling. I enjoy traveling through this world I'm creating. I enjoy figuring it out. Like as much as I like the feedback, as much as I like money, as much as I like, you know, putting those books on my shelf, nothing beats the process of writing. And training is the same way. Nothing was better. Like I love the moment, like to get that moment, to get your hand raised, you had to go through a lot, man. I had to get up in the morning. I had to get to the gym. I had to lift. I had to wrestle. I had to drill. I had to work on my technique. Like I had to put all that in for that moment. And it finally dawned on me when I got older, the moment is great, but what makes the moment great is everything else. The journey really is the reward. That is so corny. That sounds so lame. But I think the older I get, the more I realize, man, that's the truth. Right? Because, I mean, that's, you remember the wins. You remember the losses. But, and you don't think about all those days you got up unless you're like, man, I worked so hard for this. But, I mean, man, I love sitting on my computer and figuring this stuff out. Like that's what I live for. Like that is as great as it is for the moment, right? Walking through it and the journey is just like, it keeps me going. I'm tired most days. I have a 6-year-old boy. I'm constantly tired. Like I deal with a bunch of teenagers. I'm constantly exhausted. But when I sit there at my computer and I just open up my imagination, I feel great. I feel great. When I get my 3,000 words in, I feel great. Not finished, but great. You know, like I love it. I love it's like I work out. I still work out every day. I love it. I love the grind. Like that's what I live for.
Every milestone hit is a win.
Yeah, it really is. And there's a lot of losses too. But those are like I'm a believer that, man, losing is an opportunity to get better. Right? Every time you screw something up is a chance to figure out how you don't have to do that again. So, I mean, like, I don't, my judo teacher always said, a loss is only a loss if you didn't learn anything. And that's like the best lesson I think I ever got from sports, is that like you obsess over wins and losses, and writing it's the same way. Like, you know, I could look at the experience with DC and be like, man, I didn't get it. I was so close that I didn't get it. But I mean, man, I wouldn't have been here. I wouldn't have gotten this opportunity to develop these stories. I wouldn't have all these books. I wouldn't be talking to you right now if I looked at that as like, well, there was my shot. It's over, because it wasn't. All it was just, right? It was just like, I wanted to hit a home run. I hit a single. I hit a seeing eye single, and I'm going to get home. It's just going to take a little more work. I like analogies too. Big fan of analogies.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the Buddhist monks of China always said, you know, the problem isn't the effort. It's in the wanting.
It is. It really is.
The more unsettled you become in your victories, where if you find satisfaction in the victories, you know where your safe spot is, like where you like to live. Like you've said, you enjoy this grind. You've created stability in your life. and you only want what you want, and the stories are what you want. So that's what you've decided to do, and you're successful at it.
I like to think so. Like I said, it's ain't nothing perfect. I'm working on a book right now, and I'm going through the editing process, and there's days where I'm like, this is good. And there's days I'm like, geez, what am I doing? Like, what are you thinking here? What is this? What is this really? And I get mad at myself. But again, it's those struggles that I just, man, I live for them. And when the book is done and you can market it and you can kind of puff your chest a little bit and then it's done and then it's time to find another dragon to slay, you know, and it's the best, man. It's the absolute best.
That's some of the most prolific advice and kind of like, I guess, condensed way of describing the grind of writing in the most positive way I've ever heard it.
Thanks.
Sometimes for me, it does get a little gnawing.
It does. Well, my normal job is I'm a high school wrestling coach. I have to motivate teenagers constantly. So I try to find ways to like get it going. It helps for myself too, because I feel the same way. Like there's days I don't want to. I try to write those 3,000 words every day. Some days I get 1,500 done. Some days I get 1,000 done. But there's other days I get 5,000. You know what I'm saying? Like there's days you're feeling great, and there's days you're feeling bad. And I get those days you're feeling bad. You just got to get something on the page, man. You just got to get something. And the best part about writing is you can always fix it.
This is true. It's not like comic books where you have to, you know, get your story page in, and then if you don't like something, you got to wait 2 more weeks before it gets fixed. And just you say, hey, that's great. Where's the next page? Oh, I was working on this page, so I didn't leave that page.
You are correct, which is why I like prose, because it's just me, you know.
And that's awesome to discover, man. The journey itself, like the gift in which you can look back and give yourself your own victory, and for your own efforts, which is an intimate way of saying to yourself that you are happy with the journey that you have. Which is kind of what we all look for, you know, especially towards the end for those who, you know, who've passed on. I'm sure in their final moments, these are the things that they are thinking about when they talk about the light and their life flashing before their eyes. It's all about remembering that journey.
True. And I'm terrified of dying. Absolutely terrified of it. You know, I'm not saying, well, I got to live every moment to the fullest, but it just, the idea of dying terrifies me. But like, so you want to do as much living as possible. Like you want to, like I'm a firm believer that we're meant to do more than go to work, get drunk on the weekends and die. Like I feel like there's more to this existence than that. So, you know, try real hard to do other things, and if they work, cool. And if they don't work, well, you gotta try hard at something else.
This is why I urge people to like history, and even if you fail at math, to love history more, and just look up nothing but philosophical videos. Of all the old philosophers from like Greek, and just learn about life, because life is way more than just going to your 9 to 5 and coming home and being for happy, you know.
For sure, man. For sure.
And well, on that note, man, I'm gonna end it right there. That's awesome. I love the book concept. I love the idea. I love the play on vampires. I love that you gave that a non-trope space so that you could make it something your own, which is always something that authors should be striving to do, because the market as far as prose books, comics, films, you know, it's all oversaturated. And much like music, you have to find creative ways to
for make sure. it
something new and something that you know isn't canon to somebody else's IPs, and you know, with all the copyright laws and stuff out there, and It's really difficult to do that, so I'm looking forward to reading it. A shameless backer right here. If you guys, haven't got to check it out, this is your opportunity. You'll have about 48 to 24 hours left as of this episode to go and back Red Sunrise. Just type in Red Sunrise on Kickstarter in the search bar, kickstarter.com, and it'll pop right up. And of course, as always, there will be links in the show notes that'll bring you directly to the page from your iPhone, Android phone, tablet device, laptop, whatever you choose to use, because we are on 7 different streaming services, including Amazon Music, iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor FM, and all the above. So, but thank you so much, JD, Olivia, for coming on to the show, man, talking about, you know, Red Sunrise, your incredible journey, all the different obstacles that you face, and giving us a really good, positive
intrinsic view on the grind and kind of how you discovered your own way of telling stories, which should be very important for a lot of people listening at home. My name is Inevitable Mike. This is the Comics Pop-Tart Show. Every week, at least twice a week, go check us out on the newsletter at comics and the letter n pop-tarts.com. Sign up for a newsletter, get instant updates for all new episodes that show up on the show, and also get a preview of the 6-page of Wild Oni. Lots of things to come there. I make updates at least once a week. And as always, thank you to all of you who listen to the show around the world and other countries, especially here in the U.S. Until next time, don't wait for permission to create anything. Always believe in yourself, and the grind is worth the glory if you're willing to work for it. Again, my name is Inevitable Mike. This is J.D. Olivia from Comics and Pop-Tarts and Talk Cave. Thank you for joining the Tardy Party. You guys have a great day. What's up, Pop-Tart Nation? Welcome to the Tardy Party. My name is Inevitable Mike. Of course you know, because you're listening to this show right now. And I want to thank you for listening to this show. I appreciate it. What I wanted to talk about real quick in this commercial break is Wild Oni page on Facebook is up. You can go to hashtag Legend of the Wild Oni or at Wild Oni, or just go to Facebook, type in Wild Oni. Go like the page, subscribe, lots of cool updates. I'll be posting 2-3 times a week there. And if you don't know, go to the blog on comicsandpop-tarts.com, where you can leave me a voicemail, potentially be heard in the show. Let me know what you like about Wild Oni, what you're looking forward to, what you like about the show, what you'd like to see or hear on the show. And maybe if you have a suggested guest, maybe I could make an active goal of making that requested guest a guest on the show so you can hear from them. I always appreciate emails, comments. Go subscribe to the Comics Substack newsletter. Always leave open comments there for fans to go in and comment on my newsletter. I appreciate you guys all around the world in all the 11 countries that I know of and possibly more who listen to the show every week. I appreciate it. Now, back to the Tardy Party!